that's a good grab. This is what's commonly known as the second edition of the spillover class from the August seminar. We were overflowed from the August session. This is a repeat of it, to the degree that we can repeat anything. And it was full, but a lot of people canceled because they figured they'd get the same stuff in Las Vegas, which is partially true, but you will not get it under such intimate circumstances that a small group provides. So anybody wants to get even closer, please do so. You had passed out among you your yes, Jesse. You have your workbook, so that's good. I'm going to address quite a few things today, all of which should be very beneficial to you. The chief thrust, of course, is to describe Synergism 2 and report on its effectiveness as represented by persons who have no emotional reason to make it any better or worse than it really was, independent surveyors, so to speak. And to go over what Synergism 2 will do for you, it being the last velocity program. It is the ultimate velocity program. We try to take velocity any farther than Synergism 2 would be folly. So we are making sure that it is bug-free and absolutely perfect before it's released. It will then be sent down to, Diversion is there now, they're working on it, in Florida, a place that machine language is for you, so that instead of waiting 8 to 10 minutes for your sort, you'll get it in less than 30 seconds, presumably.
Hopefully, they can do it.
They say it's 8 seconds, so I say 80. You know, everybody sometimes exaggerates, but even if it's 80 seconds, that's certainly going to be great. We're going to also discuss, which we'll have some graphic details of today, thanks to Mr. Joel Bolger, the replacement for Percent Early. We have with us today the man who demonstrated conclusively with his own research that Percent Early, while effective and while very usable in the hands of certain people, was not truly effective enough for most people. That's Jay Elliott over there in the corner, the man with the long curly hair, who did an intensive research on Percent Earlys, demonstrating that the parameters at too wide a range to be used effectively by the general public, our general public. And therefore, we sought to correct that deficiency, and it has been done so in percent median energy, which we'll go into later as well. We're also going to try to isolate for you the biggest problem that anybody has, myself included, which is when looking at pace lines, looking at horses that are impossible, that have absolutely no chance in the race, and putting those into our computer and cluttering it up with noise and possibly having it point to the wrong contenders as a result. So the deceleration graph, as we have developed it now, provides you with almost an instantaneous look at the obvious standouts in a race. And contrary-wise, the horses that just really have no chance. And it's very graphic. And it's much more easy to understand than just looking at some computer-generated numbers, most people feel. If you're not having trouble in that area, then you won't use it. And we have another exercise at the end of the day for finding contenders based on letting your intuition take fuller range. Yesterday we started off, as we will today, with a report on Remington Park. Now, a lot of people who are information-oriented just want precise mathematical information and not insight. We'll say, why the heck are you going to waste our time telling us about Remington Park? Well, they're missing the perspective of what this means to racing. You've all heard of Remington Park, have you not? You've all heard of Equitrack. It has been publicized in virtually every racing-oriented magazine, journal, racing forum it has been the talk of the industry. To say that it does not affect us in any way because it's in Oklahoma is folly because of several things. It demonstrates what a true equi-surface reflects in racing. It also demonstrates how far in the dark ages contemporary concepts of handicapping are. And it reflects the fact that virtually every track ownership was represented for the first 2 weeks at Remington with the idea of installing EquiTurf at their tracks. Don't think it's going to stop in Oklahoma City. You will, no matter where you play, if they don't move it to the West Coast, it will not matter because there will be courses coming from an EquiTrack to the West Coast that you'll have to evaluate. Somewhere along the line, you will meet face-to-face EquiTrack. But the EquiTrack is not the main issue. It is what does it tell us about racing when we see a brand new track with shippers from everywhere, no circuit of its own, shippers coming from all over. What does it tell us about racing that we may not have perceived when we play an established track? The facts that we perceive here are no different from the facts you perceive in an average track, but we are steeped in myth about Santa Anita and Hollywood and the tracks we play. This track has no mythical background. The reality that occurred from the first day at that track and will continue on is a reality that can be traced. Therefore, how many of you have ever been there on a brand new track opened? You realize that the historical significance of being there and watching a new track from the first day tells us a lot about racing, not just about that track or about the surface of that track. To review, EquiTrack was heralded by the Racing Forum and Racing Action. Any of you read Racing Action? It's not a bad journal. When I say not bad, it gives you a very good overview of what other people think about racing. And even when they're inaccurate, you certainly want to know what they're thinking, and you want them to be very inaccurate, so that the public will go along doing stupid things. We do not want to encourage a journal to tell you the truth, because the public might catch on someday, and our business will take a dip in profits. All of our business, which is making money from a racetrack or from a racetrack. To begin with, EquiTrack was perilous, as you probably all read, as a unique surface in which will never be affected by the weather. It will always be listed as fast. To make this more real to the customer, there is only one symbol on the tote board for track condition. It's in neon, and there's nothing behind it, and they can't change it. It always says fast. Day one, I was not there. For the first 4 days, Jimmy Bradshaw had to do it on his own. I was there in the second 2 weeks of the track. Day one, 1:14-1, the first race. 6 furlongs. 27-1. 7 furlongs. 1:19-3, 6.5 furlongs. The routes, which they had very few of in the first week, 1:47 for a mile and 16, 1:43-3 for a mile and 70 yards. In the morning, the horses were working out in 1:11, the same horses. Conclusion. Bradshaw's no dummy. He may talk funny, but he's no dummy. Conclusion is that the heat and moisture have a very decided effect on the running times of this track. All these trainers who were applauding it because they had these wonderful morning workouts, then their horse runs 1:14-1 in the afternoon. I'm not making any comments. They got them pretty well bribed over there. There's very little mention in the press or very few interviews to explain this. They go on heralding it. Good point. Absolutely no post-position bias. Only two post-positions repeated in any given day, 4 one day and 5 another day. And those are the post-positions that historically produced slightly more winners than any other. No rail bias, no lane could be carved out of which everybody tried to get into to go faster. It was a unique surface in the respect that wherever you were on the track. They had one instance of a horse that broke the track record last Sunday, mile 16th in 1:14.3. Six and a half furlongs in 1:14.3. Now that's faster than Hollywood Park, and within 3/5 of the track record set at Anita, which hasn't been duplicated in a long time. The horse was coming on the stretch, leading by only 2 lengths. It veered 15 wide. Literally, it went crazy. What's going on here? It came around and won by 2 lengths and broke the track record. Now, the newspaper analyst said that he lost 15 lengths by going 15 wide. He did not lose 15 lengths. That's a misconception. But he did go wide and made up for it because the track provided there was no bias against him doing as well going wide as there was if he'd been on an inside track. He did not lose ground because it was just as good a surface to run on where he went wide as it would have been had he been on the rail. That is an asset of this track. It rained slightly the first weekend, slightly for Oklahoma. To us, it would have been a deluge. And the times went down. The first week of the track meet established a 1:10.3 track record for 6 furlongs. We thought that was about as fast as it was going to get, so they started publishing that in the form. We went over the second week, and nothing happened weather-wise to change it. They were running in the 1:10 and 3 to 1:12 area, correspondingly times for the other distance. So we're on our way to the track Wednesday morning of the last week we spent there. Jimmy, you know, Jimmy's the master of the Indian conjure. You put a conjure on something, and it won't work. So he said, we got to put a conjure on this track hard to get to rain so we can see what it does in real rain. Great, Jimmy. So it didn't rain that day, so that night, the most god-awful thunder and lightning storm came, and I said, Jimmy, I'm knocking on the wall. Jimmy, a conjure's one thing, but what are you going to try to blow up the state? It was horrendous, and you drown. You look out, and you're soaked. And the next day, and the 2 days thereafter, virtually every race set a new track record. The more it rained, and it was got to be funny. I'd roll on the floor laughing because the announcer used to work out here in Hollywood Park. It's very serious. He said, and that establishes a new track record. And after every race, you do this, and he never crack a grin. What you've got is, on equity track, is you're going to have your track records established in driving rainstorms. And there's nothing to do about it. The track record is when they finally settle in, and that's the fastest time, that'll be the track record until it's broken. And it does not have to be in the dry weather. It can be whatever it is. Now, every other track in the country, the track record was established in hard, dry, fast conditions. This will be the only track in the country, and those that use Equitrack in the future, where the track record is established in inclement weather. Secondly, if anybody makes a part-time chart and you're tempted to buy it for that track, you would be best off telling us and we'll get a class action suit against it. We could end Quirin's career viciously if we wanted to, if he tries to make a part-time chart for that track. Because as you know, all part-time charts go from the bottom of the class level to the top, and for some curious reason, the God who made all men equal made all horses 1/5 of a second apart, because as they ascend in class, they're running 1/5 of a second faster. I don't know how God arranged that, but anyway, Quirin and all your other part-time chart makers tell you that they're 1/5 apart. Well, the track record, all of them, at that track were established by the highest level was established by an $8,000 claimer, which is fairly good for there. It's probably equivalent to 16 or 20 here. The stakes races were not run in such as they were, $25,000 stakes races, were not run in record times, even though they had one on each of the days that the track record was broken by the rain. The Macon Climbers broke it the first time. 109 and 3 was established as the track record everybody thought would never go below that by Macon Climbers with some first time starters in the race. The 108 and 3 that is finally holding now as a 6 furlong was established by $8,000 claimers. The 108 and 1 internal fraction at 6.5 furlongs was established by similar claimers with a $9,000 purse. So the stakes races are running far slower than the maiden races. Now, if anybody produces a part-time chart that does not reflect that, the man is absolutely sitting up there in the Citadel somewhere lying. Because this is reality. This is what the track's doing. Of course, Jimmy will send us every day the results charts. The good news is this, and this is where it gets down to what we're doing today. That despite a 6-second deviation in time, which really, taken on average, would be about a 5-second deviation time, which is very great. 5 seconds is a 25 variant. So you're going to have a daily variant in the racing form when they finally start putting it in, speed rating and daily variant, that'll be between 25 and 36 on a fast track. Now, how often have you seen, you who look at racing form daily variants, you know that the national average is 18, 19, 20. That's the cluster area, the national average of daily variants, 20 being pretty well established. So when you have a 5 to 10 points higher than that consistently, you're going to have a range of 0 daily variant to 36 daily variant on a fast track. Now, wouldn't you love to have that on every track in the country? Because your speed handicapper wouldn't know what the heck to do. Your variant makers would have no idea what to do. Your classical handicappers who so smugly sit around and brag about their 27% would be absolutely, they'd be down to 12%. Unless they just guessed or took up a new method of determining who the winner was going to be. Equitrack has one character, is the most, it says it's going to be unbiased. Equitrack is the most biased surface in the world. It is almost impossible for a front runner to win on Equitrack unless he also owns the best or one of the top two closing fractions. 6 times in 3 weeks, a horse went wire to wire, or was perceived to have gone wire to wire. 6 times. 2 of them were maidens, so only 4 actual races that we would consider valid handicapping races. Only 4 of them went wire to wire. In each case, it was by a horse so superior that he was able to sustain himself in the final fraction. But in watching the races, they didn't go wire to wire. The racing form would reflect it, because at each of the calls, the horse was in the lead. What would happen is that by the 3rd week, the jockeys started getting some smarts. If their horse took the lead, they would gradually pull it back and be in 3rd place, and then they would move. And they never took a lead and kept the lead, not once. They always held back, conserved some energy, let some horse go ahead of them for a little while. And then they'd take the lead over because that horse would tire. So they were perceived as going wire to wire, but actually only 2 of them was in the lead from the start to the finish, and they were superior horses. One of them being, each one of those incidentally set a track, 2-track record. So it is a sustained bias track, it has no post-position bias, and the surface is altered by moisture. Hot and humid is validated. Only hot and dry do they run extremely slow. Now, if they extend their meet and they get Equitrack in an area where you have long hot summers, such as we do, you get times up to 116 per 6 furlong. The first week was happened to be the tail end of a drought, which the Oklahoma paper said was the worst since the Dust Bowl. And that's why they ran, why the track was so dry. After the first rain, it's down and down. The longer the rain, the lower the speed. So you've got a very interesting phenomenon. What it teaches us, though, is that on any track, how the horse's running style, as demanded by the track and as produced by the matchup, if the running style of the horse is more important an ingredient in handicapping than the speed of the horse. Because you can win over there by knowing which of your readouts to use as the most interpretive. And with Synergism 2, which I was using, I lost in 7 days, 8 days of racing, I lost 5 races. Jimmy even lost 5 races. 2 days in a row, we swept the card the last 2 days. But we did lose 1 race a day other than those 2 days. Now, Jimmy was not using Synergism 2, but we both came out with the same number. He was using energy. One gratifying thing was that it's not just us who can win there. It's not just those of us who come to classrooms and have hands-on help and are closely associated with the source. A man came up to me and put his arm around me. He's an Oklahoma guy. When an Oklahoman puts his arm around you, you better watch out because they don't have too many limp wrists down there. They hang them. But this guy puts his arm around me. And he said, bless you. Your method has made me a winner, and I did real well here at Bremen. I said, what program are you using? It's Synergism. He said, I'd just like to check one thing with you. I've been using my setup times from Exarvin, which seems to have times that are right in the middle of all these various shippers. And I said, yep, that's what you should do. I didn't know that for a fact, but he was winning, and that's what he was doing, so that's what you should do. At any rate, this man was winning, and a lot of other methodologists who we do know back there were winning with Synergism. Because Synergism adjusts for most of the deviation of time, and where it does not adjust for most of the deviation of time, it gives you secondary readouts which will be compensatory. So maybe a 4W because he runs slow, but he's number one sustained. That's all you need. That's what was winning, and that's what they bet on. And percent median, of course, has been far, far superior to percent early, and that was incorporated into that. Now, how many of you subscribe to Phillips Racing Newsletter? Down to two here.
I used to.
It used to be everybody. But Phillips has a chart sent in by one of our old clients, a track class chart on this issue. I believe Sarkin's Perko group developed this, and we did. And it's erroneous. It's true, but it's not true. In that chart, you'll find that Blue Ribbon Downs is as low as you can get, and Albuquerque is about 4 grades down, and Rio Doso is 1 grade down from that, and Sunland Park's 1 grade down from that, and Louisiana Downs is up toward the top, third down from the top. Fairgrounds is about in that area, a little lower. And Exarvin is in the top 3. And Louisiana Downs and Delta Downs. You know, there's a wide range, at least 4 class levels, track class levels, represented in every race there. And lo and behold, folks, the horse coming from the lower class track, especially in the first week, was winning over the horses coming from the higher class track. Reason? Everybody sent their dogs down there. You send your worst horses, it takes a while to see which of the worst horses are better than the other worst horses. It took about a week to sort them out. So that track class chart should be used with a deal of introspection. You have to understand that that is the level of the first levels of those tracks, but there is not that much difference after you get past your Big Apple in Southern California. But they can come up and nip it. But average purse value was the key. After the first week, all the races but were won by a horse from the top 3 average purse value. Place horses were still coming from Mexico. The winners were coming. And one horse had absolutely, the biggest exact was two biggest exactas we both had. One was 150, the $2 exact. The other 189. APV produced the second horse, the other horse, and each one of those. If you ignored the APV on a horse, you couldn't find a line for some of these horses anywhere. APV was instrumental, as it is everywhere. Joel Bolger had statistics in his mind that said APV wasn't worth a damn. Well, I'm finally bulldozing this year that it was worth a damn, and he's been winning ever since, not just because of that, but because that subjective statistics of those of you who come with the idea that APV does not put you onto the right horses, you are really wasting one of the key tools. The methodology is a holistic thing, and you can't just take pace and ignore the other things. Because the APV horses have a way of demonstrating their back class and overcoming faster horses with relatively little APV. At that track, and as at every other track we've tried, if all the horses are in the 50s, 40s, and 60s, then there's very little distinction. You're all under the first value. If you have one or two that are up here and the rest of them are down here, you'll find that one of those one or two, or both of them, will key your exact, will come in first, second, sometimes only third. They very definitely, it's like starting all over again down there. Everything was tested and proved at our tracks where we all played mostly was very dramatically demonstrated there. Now, that's the thing, the key thing to remember on this is that speed, final time, is not the answer. That running style is more and more emphasized as the answer. How many of you had a good Del Mar meeting? How many of you had a bad Del Mar meeting? Okay, most of us had a terrific Del Mar meeting. People who never had sent in this, what, Form 555 or 1550 or whatever they do. I got over a dozen of them from clients at Del Mar. Never have I had that many sent to me of their withholding, the government taking money out of their one-two-month. As much as at Del Mar. It was a situation of extremes. Those who did not do well were clinging to what they thought it should run as opposed to what it did run. Del Mar was not just sustained, it was late. So those who did not view the third fraction in their readouts, did not interpret the third fraction, just used sustained. They might have believed in sustained, but sustained itself would not get them. Horse could be third, sustained, number one late, and win the race. Fourth sustained even would win races. And when it dramatically changed around, it would do once a day, you'd have a race that was entirely the other way, early. But if you, those who read the matchup manual knew that that race was destined to run early. Those who used their ESPs properly knew that the conglomerate running style of the horses in those races was such that early would win. Because everybody was a closer, and any horse that really took a lead could do it. I had my biggest payout was a $75 winner on the turf. Some of you probably had it too, I'm sure. It was on the Friday, maybe it was the Thursday. Either the Thursday or the Friday before Labor Day. It's $75 and $648 exact. Funny thing on an amusing side of that, you know, I don't usually respond to pretty alike. But there were about six clients. I went to India because San Bernardino is getting impossible. Well, you were there. Yeah, we were there one of the days I was there. And I had one horse, I gave the horse to him, but you wouldn't bet it. He liked some other. not that was not the day he was there. $17 something per horse in the first race. But the clients would come up and say, they wouldn't say, who do you like? They'd say, I wonder if you'd mind giving me your analysis of this. So I got down where I'm sitting there, and I said, okay, I relent. Well, what happens is, you may have read a story by Kelso Sturgeon, who was a writer for various magazines and used to be the publicity director for Churchill Guns. He got on a radio show once out here in Los Angeles and gave out a horse and he thought would win at Laurel the next day. Well, the word got out and horse players have an underground network of communications. It goes like this. By the time the next morning came around, it became they'd taken a lot of action on it in Vegas until it became a steam horse. Had bet it down from its 15-1 morning line odds to 2-3 or 4-5 or something at Laurel. Vegas stood to lose millions just because he makes his casual mention on a radio show. Well, fortunately, the horse did not hit the board, so nobody took a loss. But he tells a story that sure does show you how the communications network of horse players. Well, this happened down there. I'm reciting all these things, analyzing this, and people are going more and more. I'm seeing. So I go to cash my ticket on that horse that we talked about in the first race, one. And the teller, I cash mine late because I'm getting all the slaps on the back and thank you, oh boy, that's great. The teller says, hey, this is strange. Almost everybody in the room had this horse. And he says, well, how come they got $17 price on it when everybody forgets that most of the money was at the track? And he said, I've never seen a situation